So we'd like to welcome you to Leveraging Real Software to Interface with Real Hardware via PLCs, presented by Thomas Stover. Thomas Stover has worked as independent software engineering consultant for the last 9 years, with a focus on open source technologies. He spent much of the last six years in the industrial automation and SCADA problem domain. In particular, rebuilding and maintaining a large-scale cellular backhauled hydro and meteorological monitoring network with embedded Linux systems. He is currently in the process of evangelizing his fascination with penetrating the ultra-proprietary industrial control system space with open-source tools and ideas. So let's welcome Thomas Stover. Thanks.
Thanks. All right, mic, audio working? Cool. Well, that's a pretty interesting introduction. Okay. All right. What I'd like to do, what I'm trying to accomplish by coming here today is to try to get other people excited about what I'm doing here. I'm trying to get this project started. It's fairly new, ground up thing, and I'd like to just get the word out and try to get people excited about things that, you know, that you could go home and think about. Hey, I could build this with this, or I could use this to solve this problem, or hey, yeah, we should look at doing it that way and learn about it and try to get more interest in it and try to get people to help me out as well and just sort of see how far this can grow. You know, you got to think long term with things, just a little bit at a time, and you never know how things can turn out. So when I'm talking about the field of automation in the sense of, okay, you know, just the classical sense of automation, like, okay, well, you know, you use mechanization or something to try to do things that otherwise you couldn't do. But then, you know, more specifically, we're talking about, you know, making a computer talk to stuff in the real world. These slides are kind of lame. I wish I could show a lot of the pictures of the stuff that I do for my clients, but, you know, between not being, you know, respecting people's privacy and trying to whip these things out as quick, so it'll be more of a, I got a demonstration I can show, and but a lot of them are just kind of me talking about these things, so apologize for the blandness of them. But, you know, it relates to all these things. As far as it goes back, it's an area that touches on so many areas that you can think of it in any number of perspectives. There's a lot, people come into this area from so many different backgrounds, for so many different reasons, trying to solve so many different problems. And a lot of these things there's lots of different ways to do it. You know, you could say, oh, well, you know, we go about it this way, but we're doing the same thing, we come about it this way. It's like everything else. It's kind of fun for that reason. And but the main thing is, you know, whether or not you realize it, you know, everything you know, we think about computers, you know, obviously all the benefits they give us in daily life, but it's also the way they support all the last several generations of technological innovations. All the things that brings utilities and water, irrigation, power plants, sewer, things that make the world work, things that we depend on that make us able to have a civilization like we do. And it's largely is because of automation in the sense of bringing all the benefits of computers to that world. And I guess what I was getting at with that is, what that means is, in the same way that, you know, now we went through the wave of, we have like commodity hardware, and we've got like Linux, and you can do whatever you want with your computer, and you can have fun with it. Well, there's also that world of stuff that you can do now. So like previously, you know, you may have had limited access to like, oh, you got to be building an assembly line in a factory for somebody to even get to have access to some of these things. But now, just like everything else, you know, you can, you know, get on eBay or buy you some parts, and you can rig up whatever you want. You know, it's like a whole, you know, new thing that you can access and you can mess with and tinker with and integrate with the stuff that you work with. So I mean that in a constructive sense, but it's also very important to think about it in the destructive sense, in the sense of that a lot of the people in this field, they're not really computer people. They come from electrical engineering or things like that, and they don't understand a lot of the security consequences of taking something and interfacing it with like Windows. And you think, oh gosh, you know, a computer person would go, holy smokes, you would never ever do this. But yet things of that nature are done, and you put it tremendous. Everyone, the classical case everybody talks about is, would you trust proprietary cryptography? And the answer is, of course, you can't. You can't really trust it. And that's why, you know, the argument of things like OpenSSL and GPG, you know, so it's well, you can in concept, you can trust it because you have access to the code, and in a sense, it's more secure. And when you get to control systems, you know, it's the same security. You need that openness, and we don't have that. We that's not something that we have, but we're getting there. And that's kind of my point, is to start the road towards that. Good example, probably the best example that's happened in decades, this last current events in this last year, was, you know, we all heard the Iranian nuclear program. They had a computer virus that was specifically designed to go into their industrial automation that controls the centrifuge for where they enrich uranium, and was designed to adjust the RPMs on the centrifuge to where over time it would destroy itself, and at the same time pretend a lie to the interface to say that it wasn't really doing that. And so it took years. So the point is that in the real world, at least in the public eye, viable attacks on the physical world exist that have been done. And that's just part of the world we live in now. So it's a lot of different ways to think about it. Okay, so I guess these people, classically, if you're trying to check a computer system, you're trying to interface it with stuff, one very large part of the world to do this is you just get a regular PC. You know, and it might be called like a ruggedized PC or industrial PC, and there's a whole industry of this kind of stuff. And then you buy like little specialized peripherals. You know, like if you're in like a lab, an academic setting, you might see like a USB thing that goes in, and you've got like thermocouples and stuff that go in it. Or, you know, if you're in like an avionics type application, you know, you might see, you know, a rack of like all these breakout boxes with like, you know, points coming in, and they all end up going back into like a bus or a back plane, and then goes back into it's just a regular PC at the end of the day. And then, you know, you might run like QNX or some kind of other, or maybe even a real-time Linux, something like that. So that's part of that world. But you usually see that for when you have very high data rate that you need to sample, like LiDAR sampling, something like that. That's kind of a related but different world. I think what's most closely related to what I'm talking about is microcontrollers. And there's a table back there with some microcontrollers, which I want to check out after I make it through this presentation. So there, especially in academic and in hobbyist stuff, is probably where you see those used the most. And a microcontroller is essentially it's just a little bitty computer. It's stripped down resources. You know, like running a battery or something, and you can run programs on it, and you have general purpose I/O and analog I/O and stuff like that. And that's great. You know, that's a whole world, and they're really fun. And in some ways, they're more fun. But when you get to a commercial environment, industrial environment, okay, you know, you show up and you've got an integrated circuit, and you know, and then you've got all these wires, and it's like, okay, well, how do we, you know, well, now you end up having to build, you have to have something fabricated to where you go in with isolated I/O and all this kind of stuff, or just to get something as simple as a screw terminal. I mean, some of these microcontrollers, the mass manufacture rate is like $3 retail price. And you think, oh, that's great. You know, it's $3-$4. But yet, I've got a pin that's like, I can see it in a microscope, and I'm supposed to wire up, you know, some kind of wire like that. And yeah, you can do it, but on a scale, you know, where you're going to do installations over and over again. So you end up buying what they call prototype boards, which is where all that work is done for you, where you can go in and just kind of hack the stuff together. Which is, you know, the price then goes past what you would deal with an alternative, or you have to have a very large scale project where you say, okay, yeah, we're gonna make this little device, but we're gonna need, I don't know, 10,000 of them, so it's cool. We'll just have some, you know, that kind of stuff. But it's a different area. Again, related but different area. I'm just kind of trying to narrow this down. And then some people ask me about these questions. This is another related but not the same thing. An application specific integrated circuit is similar, and normally you think of it for trying to improve the speed of numerical calculations. But in the control world, sometimes you see that for things like where they try to have very, very, very high precision time measurements of sequence of events, things like that. And In the older days, you would just simply build a circuit. Just with electronics, you would just have the thing custom built. And that world is kind of moving into those. But it's still a different area. You have to go through fabrication costs, and it's more of an academic area. And then the other one is programmable gate arrays, which should have been. And that's a new world, too. But, again, you see that in the two extremes, either in academic research or in the extremely high-end industrial things that are a little bit less applicable, where you might have most people think of it, and probably in our audience, you might think of the type of application for things like quality of service routing and big enterprise switches. But it does have a role in automation for the same purposes, where you might have, trying to do extreme precision on something in an exact time manner. But again, related, but not quite the same thing. Okay, so then we move into PLCs. And the whole, like, world of PLC stuff is multiple industries. And it's been going on for decades. And in the old days, you know, if you were going to build a factory or, you know, a power plant or whatever, you had to just hire some people, and they just build all this stuff. You know, you have electrical engineers, and they just design circuits. And then that kind of moved into RTUs and reusable components. And then finally, somebody said, okay, you know, let's scale down, and we'll have these reusable little components. I got one here. This is, I hope I don't rip the wires. I was going to show this later. But, it's just the little boxes. And the basic idea is, okay, yeah, we'll put some programmable logic in there where you can write some software for it, make it do some decisions. But we'll go ahead and we'll give you, the intended use of the product is to do something with it for real. Like, you wire it up, and we'll, actually give you screw terminals, and it's like UL rated, and it's rated for building code, so you could go into an electrical box in your basement and actually put the thing in there, or in a factory or something, and you don't get this duct tape and hot glue feel. It's actually intended for that, and they're ruggedized, intrinsically safe. So if you might have volatile gases and all kinds of different specialized criteria, and there's a whole industry of stuff. But it kind of comes into play, and how I got into it is people who are in other fields, that not me, I'm coming from a computer background, but people who are in the industrial fields and engineering fields, and to a lesser extent academic, that's what they start to use. This is becoming an accepted, reusable approach, is to a certain set of problems. You take, you say, how would you solve that? And the answer is, oh, yeah, well, you get your PLC, and you do this and that. And so in that sense, coming at it from a computer background, it's kind of something that you're curious about, because it requires computers at some point, and you want to try to leverage that and be able to work with those people. And so it kind of mirrors like the computer industry in a lot of ways, where you go from this, oh man, call for price, we're going to hassle you down with a salesman, thousands of dollars type stuff, to now you've got it to where there are some outfits that kind of sell directly to people, and lower scale, you might get something for $100 or whatever. And the outfit that I'm playing with is outfit called Automation Direct out of Atlanta. And I don't, I'm not doing this for them. Or if they found out I was doing this, they'd probably try to shut me down and be like, dude, you're hassling our Windows customers. Stop. I'm waiting for the day they try to shut me down on that one. So I'm not, representing them anyway. But, again, same deal. So why do you even want to try to do this stuff with Linux? It's because all this stuff, it's just all about Windows, all about the worst parts about Windows. You got to have all this license, and you have to do these specific, just the whole bit. And it's just to get rid of that nonsense. It's just the same reason you use Linux for everything else you use Linux for, because you can throw away all the BS, and you can start using the stuff you want to use. I don't want to write in, this way. I want to do things this way. I want to use my development tools, not their development tools. And so that's the basic reason right there. And the other thing is that these projects, when you try to put something together, it's the time involved. You want to put, if you're going to rig something up in your house or, in a water treatment facility, you don't want to have to go in and redo this like every 6 months. You're talking about a very long time scale. And it's a lot of things in the software world. The same thing where you, if you're trying to make a software project on a very long time scale, it's almost impossible to do that in the Windows world. And so Linux is, comes again to save the day because you have, you know, API stability. You can use the stuff that you used a decade ago, and it's still there. Nobody's trying to trick you. And so that cannot be understated how important that is. And then, of course, security. And so you're already more secure just simply not having Windows in the picture. But to really get to where you want to be able to control all of the aspects of every other device from firmware on up. And in that sense, this is behind because you still are using someone else's firmware. But we're getting there one step at a time. You at least have the larger parts of the problem, you know, hooking a XP machine up to the internet or something. All that kind of stuff goes away. Okay. Another quick question is, anybody ever heard of Modbus? A lot of people. Okay. Yeah. So a lot of people say, why don't you just use the Modbus interface? Well, one thing is, on a lot of these cheaper PLCs I'm targeting for, they do support this, but you got to pay more. You got to buy a module, and so. It started out as, well, we can save money using this. The other thing is, the software that's out there to use Modbus for Linux, it's not what I was looking for. And so that's kind of a basic reason. But it's something that still could be explored. And I'm sorry, but Modbus was is a protocol that was supposed to be the standard protocol that lets you interface with all these different manufacturers' PLCs. With a computer, except that, you know, standard. It's one of these standards that, you know, it's different everywhere you go. So, you know, reality. Okay, so anyway, so you enter my project, and what I've got is at its core, a C library that will talk to this type of PLC, and then we make language bindings for things like Python is where I'm the first one I'm working on, and others will come, so that you can use it in other languages from C. We also have a program that lets you share the connection so that you can have many different programs use the same PLC connection without each one of them having to directly make that connection to serial port. And then some other things to go with that. So when you're trying to, if you're trying to actually make a finished project, using this kind of stuff, you're looking at a lot of different pieces. And on the first part, where you've got the actual stuff you're trying to deal with, instrumentation, that could be like a temperature sensor, just a switch. You know, I know people, they've got the water coming into their house metered. They know what the water pressure is. Then you know how much electrical usage they're using, all this kind of cool stuff. And it could be things like a lab experiment where you're trying to monitor temperatures or you're trying to count rates, things like that. And also output devices, you know, solenoids, motors, lights, stuff like that. And then you have the world of how you want to have this wired up and build circuits around that. And then you make your way to, include the automation hardware, which is like the PLC. And then you've got my piece, which, this GPL, you know, you use it for, LGPL for the library, so you can use it in proprietary applications. And then, so what you do is you come in and you sort of, in some way or another, you make a driver program, which could be something as simple as a bash script and a cron job that runs two lines of, you know, console text, or it could be something as elaborate as, a dedicated program that handles logic in and out. But then you also need, depending on what you're going to do, you need other pieces of the system. So for most things, you're going to also want a database and, you know, some kind of web interface or something else, you know, probably a part of a larger system. So you have to look at it as these pieces. And in the I think this is a feature. This is an improvement because previously, if you want to do anything like this, it's, okay, well, you've got to go use somebody, you know, call GE or Honeywell or whatever. And then they're going to sell you a suite of stuff that's integrated, which means that you can't just pick out one little component and say, yeah, I want to just do that, but I want to make my own thing. You know, so that's kind of the Unix way of to separate out tasks into little pieces, and that's where I'm going with that. So, that's a ridiculous slide. Oh yeah, we had a server. That's a cool one. We did is we had a small server closet. So you know, let's say you don't necessarily have your home data center, but you get an office with some stuff. So like we can do, we just put one of these little guys in. They've done this a lot. We put you monitor the temperatures. You can monitor electrical usage. You know, you put a little switch on the door, you put a motion detector. You can also put relays into power and stuff. So you can kind of replace, you know, things like monitored power strips. It kind of like, it's just, you know, you're kind of hacked up, you know, do-it-yourself kind of way. But it's fun, and you can get more control over it. You can automate logic. You can go into your, like, you know, monitoring packages to where you, like, initiate a script if such a server's down and actually just make it, you know, hey, cycle the power over here, or better yet, is the circuit breaker even on? You know, or is hey, what's the or some other cool analysis is if you're trying to look at your performance, you can also go back and look at things like your electrical usage for different CPU loads and watch that kind of stuff, and you monitor your air conditioner, all that kind of stuff. And one little thing, you know, because as you go, you get the different, you know, instrumentation and you wire it up. So we'll kind of get into that. But what I'd like to do is get to the point where I've got like templates for a lot of this stuff and just kind of explain how they are, and you can go and website and check it out and reuse the same programs and ideas. So if you're trying to understand this, I can't tell if I'm going too slow or whatever. Okay, one of the basic concepts you want to get, trying to move on to actual example here about using this stuff, is a relay. And a relay is a very simple electrical component, and it sometimes enters the picture for real and sometimes doesn't. But the point is, it's an analogy that's used throughout the PLC world. And it's just, imagine you have a switch that's sensitive to magnetism. So in other words, you could hold a magnet up to it, and it'll turn itself on or turn itself off, depending on how it's built. And you couple that with an electric magnet. So in other words, you now have an electrically controllable electrical switch. And one of the things I found that, especially if you're in education, I'd love, is do a search for Harry Porter's relay computer. And this professor built an entire computer out of relays, which is what they did, you know, in the 40s. But it helped me understand how a computer works very well, so it's really neat. Okay, if you're looking at trying to understand how a relay works, like as a software analogy, just imagine that, like, every time, you know, that electric magnet gets turned on, which is called the coil of electric magnet, that you're going to be closing the contacts on the switch. The switch is called a contact, and if it's normally open, that means it's normally turned off. Power to the relay comes on, closes the switch. If it's the other way around, it turns itself off. All right. The other big concept, I wish I could see the bottom there, is concept of an event loop. Event loop is applicable to most programming now, sometimes not in web development. But, you know, whether you're making a GUI application, network application, something like that, or you're trying to make threads synchronize with each other, where you just go around and you check for external stimulus like keyboard, you know, stuff like that. And then you you know, you check for a message, or then you actually call a callback function. And you see this in both in the event loop of the actual hardware, the PLC program itself, the driver program that you create, and then in a larger scale, sometimes you got to take the whole thing. So those are the two kind of the concepts you got to get past, is what is a relay and what is an event loop. And okay, so this goes through a serial port, which you don't have to do. You can use Ethernet to some extent, but this is focused on that for a very good reason, is the it's actually used the most. It keeps the cost down. Sometimes, yeah, you can get the PLC that actually have Ethernet connectivity, but you know, by that point, you could have bought a computer. And also, security model. You know, it's not an operating system with users and stuff, so there's no cryptography. How do you secure it? Use security when Ethernet and PLC comes down to, are you on the network, you know, physically? So it's not really doing much for you. But serial is, a lot of people go, serial, good Lord, that's like 91. But no, it's like alive and well, bigger than it's ever been. And most of the entire industrial automation world, as well as some of these other related fields, everything works on serial. And it's, you know, just the way it is. Okay, so here's a little quick. So we got the serial is what they call RS-232. There's also a variation of that called RS-485 where you can have one serial line, but then you can connect to multiple different devices. And in this diagram, for example, we get the little data server program, which is like a proxy between your individual programs, which you can go directly. The library will let you talk on the serial port directly, or it'll let you, over a local Unix socket, talk to the data server. And bottom get cut off a little bit, but the basic utility you get is called dmQuery, which is just lets you do everything you want to for the command line. So you could script that in like a bash script or something. Or you'd actually be using the library itself, or you'd be using a wrapper to the library, like Python wrapper or something like that, to connect to. Okay, then the other concept you got to get is the memory inside the PLC itself is another world, too. It's flat in the sense it's linear addressing, at least on these. But you don't have access to each individual byte. You have access to words. So if you want like the second byte, you got to grab both of them. And they have, you know, all kinds of weird things like every time you see the address written down in documentation, it's an octal. But you know, you just get past these things. And then like for legacy reasons, heavy use of an older format called BCD, binary coded decimal. Just things like this you got to take into account for. So which all this stuff adds up to a lot of challenges. So yeah, you can go and like get the documentation and make this, but it's, you know, I got to solve that problem. Then I got to solve that problem, and it's the same reason you reuse software altogether, which is to get the bugs down, get it the reliability up, make it work. Okay, and then I made this in C for a lot of good reasons, and you get a lot of pushback from people who don't understand why you do that because C can be a complete disaster, especially in hardware interfacing, I think it's appropriate. Especially if you're just dealing on Unix, Linux is appropriate. You get the best use of, you know, your package manager having versioning and that coincides with the LD shared library loader versioning. And of course, you know, you keep your resources down, so you're not trying to run like a JVM on an embedded computer. And also, if you want to use these other languages, everybody's using NumScript, you know, Ruby, whatever, and you want the best coverage of all of those, instead of having to re-implement all this stuff in each one of those, the best way to go is to just make it in C, and in such a way that you can go in and, you know, either dynamically with Swig or something like that. And so the model you got is you start off with an object that we're calling a memory segment object, and it's supposed to mirror a region of memory inside of the PLC. And so the basic workflow is where you can create one or more of these things. You tell it what address in terms of PLC address it's going to, and then you read or write into that object what it's trying to do. And that's where the data conversions come in if you go with the different integer types versus your native integer type, things like that. And then once you do that, then you can then say, okay, hey, go ahead and sync this with the PLC. But you only have the ability to read and write memory. You don't have any kind of thing where you say, hey, PLC, initiate this procedure. You have to let it pick it up. And part of the reason for that is, another reason for using a PLC model is that you have a separation of what they call hard real-time versus soft real-time components. So a hard real-time system is one where you can precisely calculate and account for how long something will need to take. So, for example, if you said, I want this conveyor belt to only go for this, you know, fraction of a second, no matter what, you know, or something like that, you have to have a hard real-time system for that. Whereas the traditional Linux installations will go soft real-time, which means, yeah, you know, it'll do what it can to keep up, but well, you know, if you got a SQL database that's thrashing the hard disk or whatever, you know, you might take another second. A lot of people go to like a real-time Linux. This is the whole world of trying to do different variations on that. But the simpler way, I think, is to you distribute the logic out. So you just go back to regular programming, regular Linux, regular, you know, whatever you want to do. Don't worry about it. And then just let your hard-time stuff stay in a dedicated environment. Okay, so we're getting back to the event loop. The API once you just start this, all you're doing is you set this memory object and say, okay, hey, read it or write it. That's all you're doing. And then in response, on your event loop, it's just going to say, okay, read worked out fine. The write worked out fine. Or, okay, here's how it's going. You know, if it has a long, lengthy process or it has to retry because of an error. Or if it didn't work. And that's what you're looking for. And we use this a glib event loop. Now, glib is comes from the GTK project. And so what that means right off the bat is if you make a GUI application with GTK, then this automatically is integrated with that event loop logic. You can also use all kinds of libraries out there that use that for networking or all kinds of stuff. And it works great just for servers and console programs. And it's extremely portable. And, possible alternatives would be like libevent, things like that, or make your own. And you can also make this work with other things. But that's a very accepted way of doing things with GLib. I guess I just explained what that was. There's this other thing that's worth mentioning that it's like for standards. It's called the OPC, and there's another industry of stuff. And all it really was is just another Windows lock-in trick to me. But recently, and this is worth mentioning, they come up and say, hey, we finally realized you actually want cross-platform. Yeah, imagine that. So they look like they're getting an effort to, and what that is like a sort of a standard spec to say we can exchange data between PLCs and different related products. So keep an eye on that, and then we might integrate with that in some way or another. Some things that I've used this for recently, there's a monitoring package called Zabbix, which is just, kind of like, you send text messages and things like that based on network monitoring. It's similar to MRTG. A lot of people have seen that. But you can, those all have little data import facilities. Like you can just run Zabbix sender and pass it a variable and data, and you can live give it data off of a PLC and vice versa. So you can say, like a lot of these packages that say, run a script based on such and such criteria. Well, that script can just be a thing that writes something to here and, like I said, cycles power on something or, initiates a light or alarm or turns, your sprinklers on. We were talking about that, running a proprietary just lawn watering thing, but just using Zabbix and stuff. So you get to do what you want. The last one that caught my eye, it's an automation project. Looks pretty good. And then the round robin database, that's a great, useful tool. And the other thing I'm working on, which I'll get to another day, a whole other presentation, is a package I'm working on to do kind of the next phase of this stuff, which is, if you're interested, you can check that out. But this kind of takes us to the next higher level of what you would think of in traditional SCADA or monitoring or building automation. I'll kind of skip to it because we're... Okay, so here is an example. We'll start. So pretty much everyone has seen a light bulb before. You know what a light bulb is. Now, in the PLC notation, they take a discrete or binary or digital inputs, refer to them as X inputs. And on output is referred to as a Y. So X is input, Y is output. And, let's say we just want to make a project turn on and off a light bulb. So what we do is... When that Y output turned on, meaning it would have a bit of one, right? Then depending on how you had things wired up, you have a relay internally in the PLCs, different variations, different models, or you would actually have an external relay if you needed a bigger load. But you could energize that, and then you could put that in the circuit for a light, and you could power that up, and you can have their models of PLCs. With AC inputs, you can use the same household electrical wiring, and just with a momentary contact switch, and do it directly in the PLC. And so you could set something up to where, now what I do is I got a button on the wall, and you can push it, and the light comes on. I can push it, and the light goes off. I make a program to do that, or if I want to, I can control that by the computer, check the status. Now, what I intended to do at one point was to have what they call a trainer, which is where you just get a little board and you run your wires and you make this project, but there's no way that's getting through airport security because it looks just like a homemade bomb because you've got wires going to stuff. So I brought the PLC, but without the you know, plywood light bulb rigged up to it. So this is an example of an actual PLC program. Now, you don't have to make a PLC program for a lot of things. You can just leave it idling and just read and write variables or memory locations to it to make it do most of its thing, including read analog inputs. So if you put a voltage analog to read temperatures or pressure or humidity, whatever, or you know, control the outputs or the inputs. But after a while, you want to put some logic. That's kind of the whole programmable logic control. That's what PLC is. The whole idea is to have some logic in there. So what they use is this thing they call ladder logic, and it's one of those things that's a little bit different depending on who you go with, but it's kind of similar. And they use the relay. And, okay, 10 minutes. Okay. And so what that basically means is for each one of the, this is a scan loop, so it goes up, so the event loop here goes over and over and over again. And so in the first line, like for example, when that button is pushed, then we have the C's are just like a piece. We pretend it's a relay; it's a virtual relay in memory. And you get a timer that closes out. Well, since I'm in a hurry, I'll try to move on what I'm trying to say with that. So we'll come back to that. But anyway, so one quick example is actually see this stuff working. Okay, so here I've got the little data server program running in a debugging mode where you can just run the foreground, look at the output, and then so there's one utility like the general purpose utility is let's see, yeah, so that DN query deal. And so what we're doing is we're saying, okay, instead of talking directly to the serial port, I want you to talk to that Unix socket, the formatting inside the PLC, the way I want you to render it out. I want you to read 2 bytes, and this is the octal memory address to read to. So what that puppy does is it goes and actually asks the data server running in the other window, would you fulfill that read request of the serial port? Yes, I did. They bring it back to you. And we print it out as all zeros, meaning that the thing is turned off. So we can actually, I'll turn it back on in a minute, you can see, the next step up would be like, okay, let's say if we wanted to make, you know, we can only take just scripting other external programs so far. Let's say we actually want to make a dedicated C program just to do this. And so I'm putting all the source and the guides and more details about how to do all this stuff on the website. You can do, I got a command line version, which will, okay, that turned, everybody heard a little click? That was a little relay inside there. And so what that did is the exact same thing that did. It's just that it was done in a directly using the C library. And so the source for all this is okay. And then the Python wrappers eventually just show that as a demonstration. But now you see that there's a little one there. But that's because that one represented the address in memory, which was whether or not to energize that coil. And you can see, you can kind of see where I'm getting at. Okay. And then so let's say, all right, I want something more than a command line. Let's make a GUI variation on that. And so, all right, so I made this, whip this up. So let's say, all right, we'll make it a little bit more involved here. So now we go in and we actually, you know, specify which data server socket we want, blah, 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 blah. Update it. Okay, yeah, light's on now. Listen for the click. Yeah, see a click. Oh, turn it off, you know, blah, blah, blah. So the point is this event loop integration with GUI. And then let's say you want to do something, I think I'm from the last few minutes here, with like a web interface. So because you've got all this event logic, you know, you probably want to do, you know, one possible alternative would be something like, you know, on Ruby on Rails, we have like a back end where it just continuously, like persistently running something. I'm trying to find the right window. But because I'm using the glib event loop, what I would rather do is use a library called libsoup, if I can find a window, whatever, one of these windows is running in. And there's a library called libsoup, which lets you do HTTP client and server components, and it lets you get the glib event loop integration. And so you can do kind of the same stuff. So I can hit refresh, and actually goes polls. Oh, it didn't work. Oh, get status. Oh, how about turn on? Oh, I heard it click. Okay, turn on. So this is very rudimentary. And so to kind of get into the details of how this would work, you look to the code for this, and you know I'm trying to squeeze way too much in here in time frame. So questions. Where do we go from here? I could look in the code for this, or just sort of yes. Okay. What?
Are you using like the their tools
No, what we're 100% free from their tools, in the sense of once these things are running in the runtime. So what I'm providing is just the protocol layer, over a serial port to talk to it, and a library to do so. You would only need their tools if you actually want to. I had a slide on that, but I took it off. To actually modify the PLC program. Now they have a pay version and a free version. Free version will actually run under Wine, or it will run under, I have it on here, under a Windows 2000 QEMU image. But that's only at the time you program it. So once it goes into production, that's not in the picture. So
this is for data access, query?
Yeah, this part of it. Did I answer your question at all? Okay. Yes?
So from a hardware perspective,
yes. 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 What they did is, and not many vendors want to deal with this, is they don't like stuff like this, is they actually published a document that you can get on their website. I have a link to it on my project page, and that tells you byte by byte how to do that. And so you could go and do that yourself. It's just the time involved, and all these specialized circumstances and getting it to work and stuff like that. Yes.
But you want to use their hardware
because
it's robust and sort of protecting everything.
Yes.
Buy one of their little boxes, use your library.
Yes.
Between,
yes.
And then build what you're doing real time.
Yes, precisely. Precisely. Sorry, that was me running too fast on these things. Yes. They is an outfit called Automation Direct, and they're the United States distributor of manufacture them, but they're Automation Direct is a vendor. And my page, which is linked on the Texas Linksys website for this, you can go and there's a project page for all this, and I'll have all this code up there and the links to all these people and all that kind of stuff, and if anybody wants to ask me anything. Yeah. What they do, they have like all these different models, and you get different modules. Like, okay, if I want to do, let's say I want to control voltage output analog, you can get a thing to do that. Or let's say I want to have, thermocouple inputs, I can do that. And again, why that particular vendor? I got into it because that's what clients were using. But it is, when you compare it to all the other ones, it's very cost effective. It's no nonsense. You just buy it off the website and it shows up. There's no hassle. And the long-term hardware support. So they've had this model for 15 years. I can still get it. There's no supply problem. And these things become very, very big deals when you try to do any kind of hardware control project using normal stuff off the shelf. Because anything to do with technology, it's on the shelf today. Tomorrow, it's different. It's not the same thing. They may update the firmware, but just availability, and you're trying to actually make a professional project for something, and it's just like, oh, so that's kind of why I'm at that.
What's the cost and I/O capability of the unit?
This particular one right here is about $100, and it comes the way it is. I don't know if I think this is called a relay module, is for the output. So it has, I want to say, 16 digital inputs, and 12 digital outputs, and then it has four module sockets to where you want to go with other additional inputs or with analog. But they have other variations. They have one they came with a new one that's like $80-something, but it doesn't have module support. I brought this particular one because it's actually a little bit already broken, so I kind of play with it in the lab in case it got destroyed on the plane getting here. Did that answer your question? Any other comments? Yes, sir.
So where do you want your project to go?
What I would like to do from here is I need to continue to improve my documentation and the information resources, and in particular the wrappers for other languages, because I know most people like to play with higher level languages. And I'd like to, this was kind of the first one, showing this example just controlling a light bulb, of having the schematics, having the PLC program, having the C programs, having it all there, and then have you know, a series of these. So when people say, hey, you know, let's use this as a component to, like I was mentioning, the server closet or something like that. Instead of having to go do that myself, I just go to, you know, this website, I just download that, flash the PLC, I buy that PLC, we can use this, and then, you know, it becomes more of a reusable thing. And then have other people say, hey, you know, I'm going to, you know, wire up something to do such and such, and to get feedback and to try to just grow and just see how we can, because, you know, you need other people working on this stuff to let it go. So that's kind of where I'm headed with this, yeah. Yes? I'm sorry, sir? The people I do that I can't say who they are, they're a utility company, and it's used 24/7 in well over 100 installations for years. This exact revision of the code is a little bit newer and less tested than that specific. This one does some more things, but in that sense, it's been very well tested. And that's kind of where I'm getting at. You know, when I first started with this, kind of before I got into that, I was kind of doing it myself on the internet. I said, yeah, well, I can just do this. It's no big deal. And I was naive enough to think it would be quick. And, you know, but then you get into it, and you're like, ooh, well, you got this one little bug. And, you know, and then as the years go by, and so that was 5 or 6 years ago. And I started to put it on my website a while back, and I'd have people from Vietnam and all over the world say, hey, man, can I get that kind of like, yeah, I get around to it. And then just kind of recently I've tried to revisit the project and try to say, okay, it's presentable enough. I won't be too embarrassed to put it out, you know, for people to look at it. So that's kind of where that's at now. I don't know if I've totally overrun my time slot or the time up. Okay. Well, thank you very much. And you can ask me questions later. All right.